Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to the father, Father, give me the share of the property that belongs to me. So he divided the property between them. A few days later, the son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country, and there squandered his property and dissolute living. Whew. When he spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to the citizens of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go with my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still afar off, the father saw him and was filled with compassion, and he ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to his father, Father, I have sinned against you in heaven before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to the slaves, quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him, the ring on his finger, and sandals on his feet. Get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now found. And they began to celebrate. The word of God. You may have a seat. What brings you joy? I want to pull a Pastor Icky this morning and have you turn to your neighbor and tell them what brings you joy. And maybe the fact that we're doing this brings you joy. So please tell your neighbor, what brings you joy? Maybe what brings you joy is a little bonus that you get in your paycheck once in a while. I don't know about you, but that would bring me joy for sure. Maybe what brings you joy is seeing friends and family that you haven't seen in a really long time. Maybe what brings you joy is just a simple sweet treat at the end of a stressful day. Maybe what brings you joy is closing your eyes and laying in bed and enjoying the peace and quiet after a really busy long day or week. A few months ago, I was driving in the car with Pastor Ben and Pastor Icky, and we usually do this game where we say, like, where do we want to go for lunch? And usually during this game, it always ends up for me choosing. I don't know how that works, but we banter along, and we usually just get in the car and go. And so on this specific day, we had gotten in the car, and I was driving, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to start driving. We're going to pick a place for lunch. I don't know where we're going, but we're just going to start driving towards Tyler. And so we started getting in the car. We were driving towards Tyler, throwing out ideas of where to go, when all of a sudden we turn on Tyler and we start approaching Michael's. Now, if you know that area well, you know that Mantra is right over there, and it's an Indian food restaurant, and it's very good. I don't know if I have nostalgia because it's one of the first restaurants that the staff brought me to when I like started here, or if it's just the good food, but I love that place. And so as we're a good maybe 30 seconds away from the driveway of entering the parking lot of Mantra, Pastor Ben says, hey, why don't we go to Mantra? And I say, wow, that is a great idea. And so without hesitation, I pull into the parking lot safely and carefully, and we get lunch at Mantra. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this story is because I want to get ahead of the narrative, because Pastor Icky likes to use stories in sermons sometimes, and so he would maybe say that I crossed three lanes of traffic quite quickly to get to the other side. But I'm here to tell you that we are all here today, safe. Safe and well, we are well. And so we went in, we had lunch, all was well. We had Indian food, it was amazing. So that right there, Indian food and hanging out with my coworkers, my friends, that's what brings me joy. So in addition to Indian food and lunches, what also brings me joy is Vacation Bible School. As you have seen this morning, there is a lot of joy in this place, and it has been like this all week long. We have had so much fun experiencing the joy and the good news of Jesus this week. In fact, this week we asked some of our kiddos what they think brings them joy, and this is what they said.
Playing basketball brings me joy.
My friends bring me joy.
Hanging out with my family and friends brings me joy.
My friends give me joy.
My dad's friends bring me joy because they're really nice to me.
Amusement parks bring me joy.
Being with the kids brings me joy.
Candy brings me joy.
My best friends bring me joy.
What brings me joy is spending time with friends and family. What brings me joy is going to church and seeing other people smile.
What brings me joy is my religion and believing in Jesus.
My pets bring me joy.
Spending time with my dad brings me joy.
Spending time with my counselors bring me joy.
Spending time with my family, friends, pets, and counselors brings me joy.
All my friends and family and like all the people that I love bring me joy.
My dad makes me joy.
My mom brings me joy.
My dog Panda brings me joy.
Dogs bring me joy.
Spreading the love of Jesus brings me joy.
She brings me joy.
Aww. Friends and family bring me joy.
Playing basketball brings me joy.
My family brings me joy. Hanging out with them brings me joy.
God brings me joy.
Those are just a few of the responses in which bring our community joy. And as I was looking around this week, I experienced a lot of joy myself. What brought me joy this week was seeing each and every single one of the kiddos experience the good news of Jesus, creating community amongst each other. What brought me joy this week was seeing our incredible youth. Let's give it a round of applause for our incredible youth. Who stretched themselves, who challenged themselves in so many different ways, and some things that us adults would maybe be like, better not. But they did the job and they were here every single day. What brings me joy is seeing all of our adult volunteers, our cafe, our snack, our security team, our lesson room, our room leads, our registration led by Pastor Devo, our preschool department, our praise team, our decorating team, and our sound team. Each of these people showed up night after night, and I guarantee you that they probably wanted a vacation night one, but they continue to show up each and every single night, and I'm so thankful for them. That brought me joy. Working alongside an incredible VBS leadership team and Mrs. Amoa and our incredible youth pastor, Pastor Ben, that was what brought me joy this week. And in addition to an amazing pastoral staff that supports and is present and is here and engaged, that's what brought me joy. And most importantly, what brings me joy is being part of a community that focuses on ensuring that every person who comes through these walls, who comes through these doors, are welcome and present here, that they experience the love of God and feel valued. Truly, the actions in which were taken by everyone this week are a sermon itself, and I guarantee you that we could end here and you could all go home feeling the love and joy that we experienced this week. However, since we're here, might as well just take a little look into one of the stories that we talked about this week. One of the stories that we read just a bit ago, the prodigal son. So I want to start here in Luke 15, where we see that Jesus is talking to a group of people. And in these first two verses, it says, "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling, saying, 'This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" I want us to start here in these first two verses because I think that it really sets the mood to understanding what is happening in these following verses, these following stories, but it also shares about who the character of Jesus is. You see, Jesus finds himself in this space and time talking to a wide group of people. I imagine as he looks out in the crowd, he's seeing the tax collectors, the people of the government, he's seeing the teachers of the law and Pharisees, the people who oppose him. Jesus is looking at different age groups and genders and different ages and different cultural backgrounds. And in these two verses, we see that the Pharisees have the audacity to mutter that Jesus is talking to people that they would never even want to come close to. You see, Jesus prepares to address a group of people that is found right in front of him because Jesus understands that all are coming from different walks of life. But he also understands that if they are there, they are seeking something far greater than themselves. I think these first two verses in this story really help us understand who Jesus is. We understand that Jesus is somebody who invites all to the party. In fact, that's what we learned this week. On Tuesday, we learned in our theme that everyone is invited to the party. You see, Jesus never leaves anyone out. And we see that in these two verses. I know that this is not only a message for our kiddos, but this is a message for each and every single one of us to remind us that Jesus is inclusive to all, that Jesus loves all, that Jesus's love is not restricted, it's not dependent upon something or someone, it's simply beautifully for all. I'm so thankful to be part of a church community that understands and loves this and values this as one of their priorities and pillars of the church, that everyone is invited to the party, that all are welcome no matter what, and that also that are cared for. So in this scene, we see that Jesus is talking to this group of people, and he begins to tell them a little bit about these two stories that we see in Luke. We see the first one starting with verse 4. So he told this parable, which one of you having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? Verse 5 says, and when he finds it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home and calls all of his friends and neighbors saying, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I don't know about you, but I remember hearing this story growing up in Sabbath school, the lost sheep. We maybe refer to it once in a while when we're losing our keys or our wallets. The lost has been found. And so we see that Jesus tells this story in addition to the following in verse 8, another story about something lost. In verse 8 it says, or what about a woman having 10 silver coins? If she loses one of them, does she not get a light and a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls everyone together, her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin that had been lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God when one sinner repents. So we see these two stories that Jesus is telling the crowd of people that are among him, in front of him. And we see that in these two stories, there is a common theme that Jesus is getting these groups of people involved with. They're saying, this is a story about something being lost and something being found. It's very logical to us. It makes sense. However, the thing that makes them go above and beyond searching for this last item is that it holds incredible value to them. We don't go searching for something that is lost unless it holds value to us, right? I remember my sophomore year of college, my best friend came out to Lincoln, Nebraska, and we decided to road trip back to Portland, Oregon together. We went through the Badlands, we went through Yellowstone, we went through all the different areas on our way back to Oregon. And at one point, we had stopped at a gas station, and we got out, we stretched a little bit, and put our water bottles on the curb. And we got busy with some stuff, and we put gas in the car, we ate our snacks, we did our stretches, and then we got back in the car, and we began to go down the road. Well, about an hour into our journey, my friend says, hey, can you get my water bottle? And all of a sudden, I look back and I cannot find it anywhere. I'm looking all over. I say, hey, pull over to the side of the road. We have to find this water bottle. I don't know where it went. And at that time, it was really popular. I don't know if it is now, but to put like stickers on your water bottle. And so we had stickers from places that we had visited. We had stickers on it from all over the places that we had gone. And so these water bottles meant the world to us. And so when we pulled over to the side of the road, we were looking high and low for those water bottles and we couldn't find it anywhere. And then all of a sudden we realized that we had still left them on the curb and had taken off an hour down the road. And so here we are with this debate of saying, do we go back for our water bottles or do we just cut the losses? We're an hour into our road trip. What do we do? And so we turned to each other and kind of without hesitation, we both said, we're going back for our water bottles. So we went an hour back down the road and there were our water bottles sitting on the curb. Nobody had touched them. Nobody had seen them or anything like that. We picked them up and went all the way back to where we were going. You see, when you lose something, you don't look for it unless it is meaningful or valuable to you. And by no means would you spend your entire day searching for your home or traveling hours back for something that you didn't care about. That's why my friend and I almost added 2 hours to our road trip because something was so valuable and meaningful to us. You see, in these two stories, we see that Jesus is reflecting about the fact that when something is lost, the beholder finds so much value in it that the beholder is willing to chase after it, to enter into places where it is hiding. And we see that Jesus is willing to do the same with us. Jesus is willing to get down into the dirt, to no matter tear up the places. Jesus is willing to move the couch cushions and find out all the things that we've done. And Jesus is willing to choose to go back to us over and over again because Jesus finds value in us. My friends, Jesus persistently seeks us because he finds value in each and every single one of us, because we are part of his family. This isn't the type of value that comes or goes with time or age. This isn't the type of value that is dependent upon the stock market or anything like this. This is the type of value that Jesus says, I have died on the cross for. This is the type of value that says, all I do is seek and run after you and think about you. The type of value that says, I can rejoice and celebrate you because you mean so much to me. The type of value that says, before I knew you, I chose you. Before you were even alive, you mattered to me. The type of value that says our family and friends are not the same without you. Our family is not whole without you here. Jesus will continue to persistently seek you no matter how lost you may feel because he finds value in you. There's still one more story left in this collection of three. And as Jesus is preparing this crowd, he tells them the final story in which we read a little bit earlier in our scripture reading. He tells a story about a rebellious son who has this like inward mindset that's saying, hey, I want to get my money and get out of here. There are so many more better things to see around, and I just really need to go out and explore the world. And we see this is a really important and an interesting thing because there's not like a bank where like the father can just like transfer the funds into his account and be like good for him to go. But more than likely, the father had to sell off animals and land and other material goods in order to get the inheritance that the son needed. And so the son takes off with his inheritance, leaving his family with less money and leaving him with less help around the farm, and of course, a gaping hole in the family. And so the son lives out his 20 minutes of fame, 20 seconds of fame, whatever the word is, and he finds himself with little to no money left. And at that point, he is headed to this place where he is feeling lost, ashamed, broken, and abandoned. He's feeling unworthy of going back to his home. And he finally gets up the guts to go back. And he says, I will prepare to swallow my pride, to talk to my father, and even work for my father if it means that I can get some food or to be able to make it through life. And we pick up the story here in Luke 15, verse 18, where it says, I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off and went to his father. But before he was still a while off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. And then his son said, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly, bring a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Bring him rings and put him on his fingers and sandals on his feet. Get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For his son was dead and is now alive again. He was lost and found, and they began to celebrate. When the father comes face to face with the son, there's no I told you so. There's no punishment. There's no shame. The father simply opens his arms and joyfully celebrates the arrival of his son again, saying, for this son was mine, was dead and now alive, was lost and now found. At surface level, this story may seem like the other two. Somebody loses something, they find it back. But we find that this is not only centered on around the position holder chasing after what is valued as much as it is the one who is accepting their worth in the position holder. Meaning that Jesus will run after us, will seek us, will choose us, but it is only us who can accept the value that we have in Jesus. When we acknowledge that Jesus has chosen us and choose him, something wonderful happens, and that's the joy in which we can experience. The joy of being part of God's family, the joy of understanding that we have value in God's family. And this is exactly what we celebrated on Wednesday together. We celebrated the good news of knowing that we are loved and valued and accepted in God's family, no matter what. When I was younger, my parents would tell me to clean my room. I don't know if you have ever spoken these words before to your children, but my parents would tell me to clean my room, and they would tell me multiple times because I would never do it. And they would tell me it again and again because they were trying to get a point across. And that's exactly what we see here in Scripture, that joy is used over 300 times throughout Scripture. Jesus is telling us to have a joy, to celebrate together, to experience this joy that is everlasting, that satisfies us in a beautiful and wonderful way. In each of these stories that we have talked about this morning, we have seen this repetitive word come up in correlation to celebration. That which has been lost has been found. That which has strayed away has come home. That which has chosen their own path has been forgiven. Through it all, we have seen this joy of celebration, and I want you to, each and every single one of you, to know this morning that we can celebrate the good news in knowing that you hold value, that you hold value not only as a child of God, but you also hold value in this space as a church family, as a community, and that no matter how lost or abandoned or unheard or left behind or just flat out tired you may feel, this is your family and this is your home. It is our job as a community to continue to make each and every person feel welcome here as we continue to do. And that in itself is something that can fill us with joy. In 1970, Richard Nixon was president. It was the third year of the lunar mission that was happening with Apollo 13. And it was also the year that Susie and John found out that they were expecting a child. I don't expect you to know who Susie and John are, but they were expecting a child. Susie and John were young. They had pictured their whole life ahead of them. They thought that they were going to get in a van and explore the nation. They were going to live this like hippie-free lifestyle. They were just going to enjoy the world around them and everything that it had to offer. And so right at the cusp of 18, Susie and John were unsure of what to do next. They pondered of what their life would look like with a young child and all of the adventures that they thought they could put on hold or have to put on hold. However, here they were face to face with the daunting task of parenthood. And so days and weeks and months went by, and this young couple went back and forth on what to do. And they didn't necessarily embrace the idea of having a child, but they didn't necessarily want to dismiss it either. And so here they had this life that they were bringing into the world. They kept this information pretty private between the two of them. They would try not to go to family functions or talk to a lot of friends. Susie was wearing baggy clothes to try to make sure that nobody noticed. And here on April 17, 1971, Susie went into labor. After hours of agonizing pain, Susie gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. However, minutes after this little baby boy was born, Susie and John had the doctors come to them. Susie and John found out that this little baby actually had Down syndrome. And devastated by the news, as they said, Susie and John didn't know what to do. They were young kids. They didn't necessarily want a child to begin with, and now to have a child who needed a little bit of extra care, they were unsure of what to do. They were brokenhearted. They didn't know what to expect. And so hours after giving birth to this little baby boy, the nurse came in and took the baby for some shots and things, and then came back and gave the baby back to the parents, only to find that Susie and John were nowhere to be found. The hospital staff and the security scoured the hospital looking for the young couple who had literally quite given birth just a couple hours before, and they were nowhere to be seen. Left empty in that hospital room, abandoned and left behind, was this beautiful baby boy with no name even. Susie and John were gone, and this baby boy was here. After a few hours of realizing that they were probably not going to be coming back anytime soon, the hospital chaplain at that time came in and actually named this little baby boy. And so after this baby boy was given a name and a social worker, it was time for a placement. And so at that very time in Gladstone, Oregon, a little family in a small, humble home was just receiving their foster care license. They were just expecting, eagerly waiting to open up their home to anyone who needed a temporary place to be. Their family of six was full enough. They had a lot going on and a lot of things happening. And they decided that no matter how many kids came through their home, they would absolutely not adopt anyone, that they would be a place of temporary safety for whoever opened through their doors. So Charles and Helen walked out on their front porch that morning in April. The sun was shining, the tulips were blooming, and everything was beautiful. And they saw the social worker coming down the driveway with this little baby boy in her hands. The social worker placed this baby in Helen's hands, and suddenly she experienced joy that she had never felt before. She experienced this value of this child who had been left and abandoned in the hospital. She experienced this joy and this celebration of knowing that this child who didn't necessarily have any family or friends or anybody who around them was now finding their home in them. Charles and Helen knew immediately that this little baby boy was going to be their forever home, that Matthew was going to be there. Matthew actually is my uncle, and he has found so much joy in our family, and we have experienced so much joy in having him as part of our family. Honestly, our family would not be complete without him. Celebrating the joy that he was placed for a purpose and for a reason, and even though he was forgotten and he was abandoned and he was left, the rest of the world thought that he was maybe not good enough. He found a home, and he was accepted into a family. My friends, I want you to know today that no matter how you may feel, no matter how the world may communicate to you what you are, I want you to know that you are loved, you are seen, and you are valued. And I hope that if anything our kiddos learn this week, that they are loved, seen, and valued, not only by God, but this community as well. We can have joy because Jesus has continued to choose us. We can have joy because he has seen us, he has loved us, and he has seen our value. And that, my friends, is the reason why we can celebrate the good news.